Meltdown presents The Disney Click with Rick and Briars. This podcast is sponsored by Meltdown Comics and Collectibles in Hollywood, California. Find Meltdown on meltcomics.com. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Disney Click with your hosts.
I think I'm Rick.
I think you are as well.
Okay.
And I think I'm Briars.
All right. Hi, guys. Welcome to our new podcast.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a new podcast.
Yeah.
It's our new episode of our podcast.
We're deep into our episodes now.
Yeah, we're rolling now.
Yeah.
Some would argue we've stopped, but I think we're rolling.
I think we're rolling,
okay, we're rolling
down the river.
Okay.
Is that the song? That's not the song? Yeah, rolling down the river.
I think it is.
It's a classic from my childhood.
We better stop this right now. And let's talk about today's episode, all right?
Okay.
Our Disney list is our best animated sidekick.
Top five.
Top five best animated sidekick. At this point, hopefully they know it's a top five, but in case you don't,
but for our new listeners,
right, that's right.
So we like to do five.
Right, we do five and we do not discuss it ahead of time.
Never.
So, you know, watch hilarity or surprises.
Listen.
Ensue, right?
Okay. If only you could see us.
Right. Then we have an attraction exploration, we can call it. We look at a attraction at Disney World, Disneyland, somewhere in the world, and today we're going to look at the Haunted Mansion, one of my personal favorite rides. And
your number one favorite, correct?
I guess it was, right?
It's
so hard to pick.
Can I tell them the bio? I mean, I'm just enlightening everyone that this is your favorite, which is fine.
It is my favorite from a pure Disney standpoint. It is my number one.
And I don't know as much about it, so I'm excited to learn some more about it. I do enjoy it.
Right, right.
It's not one of my favorites.
Okay,
but right. I don't dislike it by any means. It's no Tiki Room.
Which you love.
I just love those birds. I want an animatronic bird in my house.
Oh, that's
so
bad. I'm so getting
that's the dream.
For your birthday. And you'll
they make
have
them.
To love it.
Yeah.
They do? All right, I'll look
well,
into it.
Not Disney, I think. Just like off-brand.
Oh, well, that wouldn't be as good. And finally, we're going to go into a little personal thing for Briars and I about our most influential Disney movies in our life. What got us perhaps into, you know, Disney, the studio, the film studio, or within our lives, and that should be interesting.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the ones I've written it down, and I was like, yep, definitely own all of these on VHS.
Nice. VHS.
So yeah.
All right. That's a good sign. It's a good sign in this day and age.
And
if you have the DVD in this day and age, it actually kind of means
days.
Something, right?
I had to explain Blockbuster to a child a while back.
There used to be a room
you could go into and just stroll
walls
through movies
of VHS tapes
those
and then
the
DVDs.
Days.
I know.
And then Blu-ray.
40
and
ounce
then
of the curb
bye.
For Blockbuster,
oh.
Yeah, right? Anyway, let's get
I
this started with the Disney list.
And now, the Disney list.
Okay, so our Disney list this week is top five Disney animated sidekick characters. So we didn't really... We just kind of left it up to each other as to what we deemed a sidekick. And so we didn't set specific parameters.
What would you say a sidekick is in your case?
I would say it's going to be to the main protagonist. It's their best friend, or it's a character that is with them to help them along in their journey, or oftentimes with the princesses. It's their, like, pet animal that doesn't speak.
Right, right.
It's cute and, yeah, usually like a horse. Or I think of, like, what's the one Entangled? What is he, a little?
Maximus? Oh, no, the iguana you're talking about.
Yeah, you've got options.
Right.
No,
for
Maximus
sure.
belongs to...
Flynn.
Yeah, so
kind
Maximus...
You didn't start
yeah,
with Flynn.
Yeah, so Maximus would be... So, it's all up for debate.
Yeah.
But I think we can just make a case for each of ours.
And I would actually argue that... Oftentimes, the sidekick makes the movie. I don't remember the main character as much sometimes as I do the sidekick.
Well,
that's
a lot of the ones
so
I chose for sure
are that reason.
I'm like, if this character didn't exist in this movie,
right.
it would not be the same movie or
right.
or be as as good. It wouldn't even be
there are a lot of sidekicks to choose from. I wouldn't be surprised if we
But there have are some that just stand seem out like and they're like, gonna be boom. On there. Mm-hmm.
And while we like not to be too obvious, sometimes we can't help but be too obvious. At least for my sake of my list.
Well, I think if that happens, then probably the people listening are like, oh yeah, that's what I would put too.
Right.
It's like you can't not think of that character.
Right.
But I was surprisingly I don't have a lot of Pixar represented, but I looked through the Pixar list of films and I found that Pixar doesn't like to do the more cliche what we're thinking of as a sidekick.
Right.
And maybe that's speaking more to their they round out their stories a little not better or worse.
They break the mold a little differently than Disney animation was.
Like Toy Story. I mean you could argue that Buzz is a sidekick in the beer, but he's not.
There's no
but there's not. It's a buddy comedy.
Right.
They hold their own.
Right.
And then you look at the rest of the toys and you're like, well, are any of them sidekicks? Maybe Slinky Dog is to Woody.
Right. Well, we'll probably have a discussion on this topic with one of my choices.
Okay.
So I think you've touched on something in one of my lists. Would you like me to start? I will start.
Yeah, sure.
Number five for me is he's not necessarily the funniest or the guy that people look to and say, oh, I love that sidekick. But he is.
Then why did you?
Well, because I think he's not. Well, he's not the original sidekick. The Seven Dwarfs are the original sidekicks, I would say. I went with Jiminy Cricket from Pinocchio. He is, to me, he is.
You mean like a throwback sidekick?
Yeah, but I think.
He's definitely a sidekick.
He definitely is a sidekick, and he defines sidekick in the Disney films. And he's, he has his.
Pinocchio.
Give a little whistle.
He
he's your conscience, and
mm-hmm.
and he really epitomizes what I think a sidekick is supposed to be. And so while I can't sit here and say I love Jiminy Cricket, as far as favorite sidekicks, it's a little bit of the nostalgia nod again to what I see as who a sidekick is, what they're supposed to be, and he's kind of the template for all the Disney films that come after. The Seven Dwarfs.
More of the Disney.
Yeah,
Disney
I mean the Seven Dwarfs.
Pixar.
You could argue the Seven Dwarfs came first, so maybe they are. But he's the single sidekick. So
that's the Seven Dwarfs. That is tough.
Right.
They count as a sidekick, but it's like that's so many sidekicks.
And something I saw in the original story, the 1883 Pinocchio novel, Pinocchio kills Jiminy Cricket with a mallet. And he comes back as a ghost. I thought that was a little fact that I saw.
What?
Right?
That's so dark.
Right? It just seems so wrong. But
what was he so upset with him about?
I don't know. It's a bug.
Or
maybe.
Did he just, accidentally
It's like spider,
walk across.
Cricket,
Yeah.
And so I don't know. So I thought that was really
bummer.
Interesting. Right? It's kind of, sorry to bum you out. Let's go to your number five then.
It's okay though, because Disney took.
He came back as a ghost.
Disney protected. They protected that story, right? They didn't do that.
No.
They kept
No. He was alive.
Yeah. Was he a ghost?
He was cricketing along along the movie. So
Disney only kills the parents.
Yes, and kills the parents a lot.
Everyone is safe except for mom and dad.
Do not be mom and dad, otherwise you're in trouble.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's
so true.
Thanks for bringing us down.
No, I'm just.
You're telling them
everyone's
like it
safe
is.
In the Disney world.
Yeah.
Just don't have children.
Right.
You're in a Disney movie because then you're done.
Yeah.
My number five is Louis. From The Princess and the Frog.
The alligator.
Yes, the alligator. And so many great puns and jokes because he wants to be in a band and joking with like Louis Armstrong. He's like, I'm Louis. And I don't know. I really like Princess and the Frog. I feel like it's a little underrated.
I would agree with that.
And it's definitely harkens back to traditional animation. That's what they were trying to do. They were very...
Is that the last animated Disney film, matter of fact?
I believe that's the last full-length...
Non-computer animated.
Hand-drawn,
right.
Yeah. And it was the first one in a long time at that point, too. It had been a while, especially since a good one.
Yeah.
And good music and voice casting. I know there was some controversy. Did I say that right? Yeah, controversy. Because the princess, everyone was excited. It was the first African-American princess. And then she turned into a frog for most of the movie. So you don't even get to see her. So I know that was controversial. But I think it represents New Orleans so well in the culture there. But I just love the character of Louis. He's so funny and he's got a great song. And he really enhances that little ragtag team that comes together. Also, Ray, the little Firefly yeah, is
falls
fun
in love
too.
With the moon,
he's in love with her. Yeah,
I will say is Louis. I like the character design.
He's Louis.
Louis.
That's, yeah,
I'm sorry, Louis.
Her. Yeah,
but I don't really. I like the movie a lot, but I don't really remember him so much. And I've seen the movie a handful of times with my kids, and I like the character design. I like the movie, but as a sidekick, he's okay to me. I guess I can't. I'm not going
to
give
stood
him.
He out to me. Yeah,
yeah, like, just
he
not
just
to
stuck,
me.
He just stuck with me, and whoever did that voice. Oh, I Michael Leon Woolley.
Okay.
Did a great job.
Okay.
Kudos, Michael.
All right.
You brought Louis to life for me, Louis. I keep wanting to call him Louis Armstrong.
Right.
Well, so you're number four.
My number four is this. We're going with Sven in Frozen.
Oh,
this might be.
I do love Sven.
This might
I'm not
be
crazy about Frozen.
Yeah, we
but
talk about Frozen. I don't think
Sven,
it's that we don't like
you
Frozen.
You know what it is? It's because he's like a dog.
Well, thank you. That's you're exactly highlighting my point. I have a soft spot. I have a soft spot for
like
characters
dogs.
who act like dogs.
Interesting.
I, right?
That's ironic.
Right?
It's for someone who doesn't.
Well, you make
own
it sound like I hate dogs. I don't hate.
I
dogs.
I never said you hate dogs.
Okay. But
if when you don't own a dog and you have a backyard and the option
right.
to.
But we talk
question
about
mark.
We often talk about Frozen being overexposed and too much, and I really like Olaf the character, by the way.
But
you saw Olaf.
My gosh.
Olaf was really he's everywhere. I don't feel that I'm not so sick of him as much as okay. Let's cool it on the.
Did he have to become like the he's replaced
he's
Mickey?
He's well,
like, I don't know, for like our advertisements out here on
billboards
the princess
and stuff. I feel like Sven does not get his due,
for
and he's
sure.
a really cute, funny
and a
character.
Non-talker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just
which is
so
great.
So that's sort of my nod to Frozen
Olaf
success.
Talks.
The success Frozen Olaf talks a lot,
mm-hmm.
but I like Olaf.
Yeah,
I like
he's
Olaf.
Fine.
But Sven
so
is
like
I, maybe this is just sort of a thumbs up for a character, a sidekick character who plays second fiddle to Olaf. And while I like Olaf, Sven doesn't get enough love. And this is my way of,
I love Sven.
Of putting the spotlight on.
He
on
was
Sven.
My favorite character.
Okay.
In Frozen.
Right.
This is weird.
Yeah.
We're agreeing.
Wow.
I
liked
you
Olaf
see,
too. I liked
you
Olaf
see
too.
Sven as a little, I don't want to say puppy, but when he's a young reindeer.
Right.
When he's just met, I don't know his name
because
I'm
no.
so invested in Frozen. Oh gosh, what did you?
It's not Hans.
Because Hans is the bad one.
You keep on bringing up names and then they're making us look bad when we can't remember
no,
the names.
Just, what's funny is like usually I'd be like, oh, I should know this. But I've had this problem before because I'm so
right.
uninvested
I've
Frozen.
I've seen it so many times. I think I've just blanked out. I mean, we know
Elsa and
Anna,
Anna
and Olaf
and
Sven.
And
you know.
Kristoff.
There you go.
Oh,
Wandering
it's,
Oaken.
It's in there. It's in
yeah,
our brains.
We know these
we
people.
Have no choice.
Right.
Yeah. So I think you kind of see him as a little youthful reindeer.
Right.
I think he's a charming character.
Okay. All
and
right.
loves carrots. Oh,
that's
so
that's
cute.
My number four. Your number four.
My number four is Pixar making an appearance. And this might cause a discussion for you if you agree or not that this is a sidekick. But I think in Monsters, Inc., the sidekick character is Mike Wazowski.
No, I totally disagree.
No.
It's funny. You were saying earlier I couldn't remember my example of what is not a sidekick, and Mike was my perfect.
No, Mike.
I mean,
is.
Sully. Excuse me, Sully is not a sidekick.
No, Mike is the sidekick.
So you have Mike the sidekick.
Yeah, Mike Wazowski.
I don't think either one of them is a sidekick.
No, Mike is. No, Mike is 100% the sidekick. And
how is he the sidekick
in Monsters Incorporated?
Uh-huh.
It is Sully's film. Sully is the one going through the changes. He's the one that gets attached to Boo. Mike is there helping him. Mike's like, you can't be doing this. We got to fix this. This is a problem. Mike is a secondary character. You don't learn much about him. I've heard
you know
I've
about
heard,
his relationship. There's a whole storyline with his relationship.
Oh, yeah. He's got his own. Yeah. He's got his own little side story.
It's not such a little
but
side story.
It's all in aiding Sully's bigger story.
Well,
I mean, sidekicks,
he's got
can,
the connection
sidekicks
with the
can have their own thing going on. You think they can literally have nothing going on except a
no,
connection.
absolutely not. But I think it's
but
shown as a buddy comedy, and Boo coming into the world is Sully's issue, but it's also Mike's issue too.
It's Mike's issues because it's Sully.
Okay.
He is there to serve Sully. He's his assistant. He cares about him getting the screams. The only reason he wants Boo out of there is to protect Sully's reputation. And I've heard some of the Pixar people discuss the making of Monsters University, and they said Monsters, Inc. was Sully's film. That was his story. And so I think he was a sidekick in Monsters, Inc.
And Monsters University,
Monsters University is Mike's story. Okay, and it was their chance to be like, we had this sidekick character. I don't think it diminishes. He's still a main character in it. And I think he is an unusual sidekick in that he is such a prominent role. I love that film, and I love Mike. And I guess as a sidekick, he's hilarious.
I guess I shouldn't protest too much, because my number three is going to fall into the same category as what you're talking about. So I think if you think that Mike is a sidekick, I think for sure my number three.
I can't get upset about
Dory is my number three.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I considered Dory 100%.
Dory is a wonderful character, mm-hmm. and she really helps the.
She is a sidekick.
Interestingly enough, it was going to be a male, and I think that the creator overheard, his wife watching Ellen DeGeneres on the Ellen Show and said, "That's Dory."
Goodness, right? Because then it would just be another two male lead.
Right? Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think it's nice what they did.
Yeah, it completely changed the dynamic to have her be.
So, but I think she is a good foil to Marlin.
Oh yeah, so different.
Yeah, and I think it works really well. And she's so funny, happy-go-lucky, forgetful to his, worried about everything.
An interesting enough character, a sidekick, but yet fascinating enough that a whole film can be made about them.
Finding Dory coming
Same
out
thing as
next
Mike.
Year. Right. So.
But so in Finding Dory, she won't be a sidekick. Right. Just like Mike is not a sidekick in MU.
Right.
Looks like we've just found a way to agree. Right? I feel like I just wrote a paper you're not into it.
Well, Mike is there from the beginning. Not that this is the definitive reason why somebody's a sidekick or not a sidekick. Mike is there from the beginning of the Monsters, Inc. story. Dory is not Dory. He comes across Dory about, 20 minutes in, half an hour in.
Yeah.
He's a part of his journey.
But all the a lot of sidekicks
are there from the beginning. Yeah,
yeah. Of course. Yeah. There the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sebastian's there the whole time. And I understand. I guess in my mind...
It just comes up to size of...
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm just looking at who's... Which character, if you had to pick a character who's going through the changes. But then you look at Buzz and Woody.
Sure.
They are both going at it head-to-head, even footing. Right. It's nobody's... It's both their stories. Well, they're intertwined 100%.
I'm curious what other people think. So tweet us at the Disney Click or...
Use the hashtag #TopFiveDisneyClick.
Yep. Yeah.
And also be sure to follow us on Instagram at the Disney Click.
Yeah.
I'll put some pictures up of Mike and Dory. Are they sidekicks? Who knows?
Who knows? All right. Well, you're number three.
My number three is a duo, and it could be a lot of people's number one. Maybe it is your number one.
Probably
Maybe not.
No.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
Fabulous.
I know who it's going to be, though, I think.
Classic. Just an amazing film.
Great soundtrack.
Yes.
Well, that describes a lot of them. It takes place in Africa?
Yes, it does.
Okay, all right.
Timon and Pumbaa from The Lion King, voiced by Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella. I think Timon and Pumbaa, I think that's one of those sidekick characters, going back to what I was saying, how you take them out of The Lion King, it still would be great. It has the music, it has the emotional, but that's all of the humor. Except for the hyenas, I guess. But other than that, all of the humor from The Lion King comes from Timon and Pumbaa.
Yeah, I'm going to get flamed a little bit for this. I like them very much as sidekicks.
Don't like The Lion King?
I do like The Lion King. I don't love The Lion King. I know. Ooh, it's like sacrilege for me to say.
That is.
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't love it. I like it. I don't love it. And it's like one of those things I'm supposed to love, I guess. If I'm a Disney fan,
you never want to feel pressure. That's like Frozen. We should love Frozen.
Just because it's a wonderful
story. Have you watched
story.
It recently?
Yeah, I have. I've seen it probably more recently than I want to. And I've seen this.
Oh, gosh.
Seen the Broadway musical. And they sing my favorite, Timon and Pumbaa sing my favorite song.
Hakuna Matata
is my favorite song
Means
in the whole.
No worries.
Right. It's my favorite song in the whole movie, and if not one of my favorite songs in all of the Disney soundtrack. It's just I like the light, bouncy. It's just a wonderful message.
And all the humor.
So I don't want to
Pumbaa, not in front of the kids.
I don't want to, and I like anything that has to do with gas is always funny to me. My inner 5-year-old still appreciates that. But as I said, the movie, it's okay. It's good.
Oh,
it's
gosh. Good. Well,
it's good. I know.
Lion King might come up again, so we can okay. save it.
Uh-oh. All right. All right.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry
to torture you with more Lion King discussion.
Even though we talk, Briars and I talk a lot Disney, there's a lot that she doesn't know, my feelings. We have not discussed the Lion King. She doesn't know that about me, that I'm not a Lion King hater, but I'm also not a Lion King
lover. We'll have to
lover,
discuss so. It slightly more.
Okay. All right. My number two.
Okay.
Which is some character that I've mentioned before in another list. I don't know. We haven't gotten to that one yet, but it is Doug from Up. Definitely a sidekick. Definitely a sidekick. And for the fear of beating a dead horse, he is such a great character. Dogs are always, like, animated dogs are so cute to me. And the idea of the dog speaks.
I know what I'm getting you for your next birthday.
I hope it's not a dog.
It's a puppy. Even better.
My kids will thank you. I will hate you for that.
Oh, well, then maybe you shouldn't be allowed to have all these dogs okay. on your list.
But he's so, it's no secret that I think Up is a good movie, but overrated in the fact that I think it lives on that the first 30 minutes, and then after that it's good. I didn't connect with Doug. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's my favorite thing about the rest of the movie is Doug.
And they
is such
tapped
a great
into
character.
Something with that that had never. I mean, they've done. There's so many animated dogs or animated.
It amazes me that nobody thought about to put a collar, a talking collar on dogs.
Yes.
Right? It seems so obvious.
It's a translator.
Yeah,
it's translating the barks.
I've just met you and I love you and Squirrel and all these lines.
Gosh,
like it's so obvious.
Brilliant.
And they just.
It's almost
because
it's so
it
simple.
Right.
I mean, so literally simplistic. It's taking a dog and narrowing their thoughts down to what they're probably thinking.
Right.
And that's what's so genius about it. And the laughs, I just remember, you know, seeing it in theaters and people were losing it because it's hysterical. Because we all, you know, we're a dog culture and that's what dogs are would be saying.
Yeah, I think the character relationships in Up are nice and it's a very sweet movie. But when I think of Up, after I get past the first half an hour, it's about Doug.
It slows down a little in the third act, but I think it still is very exciting.
Fair enough. I'm not saying, once again, it's the Pixar thing that we always say.
How many Pixar's
are two. That was two.
Oh.
Yeah.
You've just had two Pixar?
I had Dory and I had Doug.
And then what was your other?
Jiminy Cricket.
Oh, okay.
And Sven.
Okay.
So no more Pixar.
Okay. Maybe it's because it's animated or CGI.
Sven kind of feels like he might be a Pixar, but he's not.
Frozen does not feel Pixar.
Okay. I'm sorry, Briars.
Ooh, sorry. That's an ice hole.
On that note, you go to your number two.
Okay. My number two is another just like an instant, I guess, not classic, but big, big time character is the genie in Aladdin. Voiced by Robin Williams.
Okay. I got to come on your list. He's my number one.
Okay.
He's my number one. So. I thought that might be your number one, but it doesn't surprise me you have him on there. Okay,
he could have been my number one, but
he seemed like so
obvious. I felt a little more passionate for my number one.
Okay, fair enough.
Just slightly more.
Right.
But again, not to be too redundant, but without the genie in Aladdin, you have not a great film. Not a bad film, but
he makes a
kids comedy.
Can you imagine no genie? I mean, Aladdin needs genie, but can you imagine it not being the manic drawing character he is? I can't.
Oh my gosh. No. I mean, his songs, he has multiple songs. And then he's one where I would say this about my number one as well, but I give 100% credit to Robin Williams. If anyone else had voiced that character, it would not be the same. And he brought so much to it. I've read a lot about how much he improvised.
Some other actors that were considered: John Candy, Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy.
Wow.
I could,
which
I,
are all
I could
all
see,
strong
well, Eddie,
in their
Eddie
own
Murphy
right.
did Mushu, so I could kind of
yes,
see
he
that.
Did.
And I could see Steve Martin, but I love Steve Martin. So I could
I
see
do.
Him
I love Steve
so
Martin.
So I could
too.
Totally have seen Steve Martin, but it's hard to imagine.
But Robin has that feeling of you've just let comedy out of a cannon, and it's like, boom,
right.
And that fits the genie. It's this thing that's been contained, all this power. I mean, the essence of Robin Williams matches what the essence of the character was. And he brought, I think people could have done an excellent job, but not had that same, it's just, you watch it and it just gets funnier. I mean, so much of it when I first saw it as a kid what came out in 1992, I probably didn't see it for a few years because I was pretty little. But when I first saw it, so much goes over your head. The humor is, that was kind of, you know, he was the precursor to what Pixar's now done with having films that are relatable for adults and children. And he did that 1,000%. So Genie was your number one. Did you have anything else, you know, to add about?
I think you kind of summed it up. There was something nice that I read about Robin Williams, rest in peace, that his quote at the time was something like $8 million per film. And he took a pay cut to something like $75,000 because he wanted to leave something wonderful behind for his kids. That was his feeling about doing
cool.
The Genie.
Yeah, I can't confirm that, but for sure. It was right around Doubtfire and things like that.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's true or not, but it sounds like something he would have done.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
So I thought that was a nice thought. That only makes me like the Genie and Robin Williams even more to hear that. Just a nice thought and for a great character. So you're number one.
My number one was supposedly up for the role of Genie, Mushu in Mulan.
Okay.
I love Mushu so much. I don't know what it is. And he's the sidekick that's like, girl, we're going to, like, he's a very invested side. You know, some sidekicks are just like, okay, I'm here. I'm a non-talking animal. But he's like, I got to help you. Like, he like is putting her through training and helping Mulan get her wardrobe together.
He's not a lizard. Don't call him a lizard.
No. He has so many great one-liners. One of my favorites, I remember right after seeing it in theaters, we used to go around saying it, was like, there goes my little baby off and saving China like that.
Eddie Murphy really voices that.
And yeah,
very
he
well.
Brought him a lot of himself, you can feel, to the role for sure, and brought the character to life.
Yeah, it's really, I haven't seen Mulan in a very long time, so I don't have a big recollection of Mushu, but I know I liked him when I saw him, and it's one of those that I instantly know Eddie Murphy's the voice.
And without Mushu, Mulan would lose a lot of its humor.
Probably.
Well, for sure.
As I said at the beginning of this Disney list, is that sidekicks more often than not make a movie. I know it's not supposed to be like that, and maybe a lot of people don't agree, but the sidekicks
mean
so
much. Well, they give it the layers. I mean, the story's going to already be there.
Or humor.
Whatever's sad or whatever's happening. But they add the humor.
Right.
They're there. They're
and
the comedic
I'm a
relief.
Guy.
We could also call them. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I'm a humor guy. I don't like
no
things to get too seriously.
Like, that sidekick's just bringing me down.
But I'm sure there's
well,
things
I thought
out
of
there.
Sadness as a sidekick kind of to Joy. But she's still funny, which is the irony.
Right.
I found sadness to be one of the funnier parts
of
Inside Out.
That's interesting. That's kind of a debate for another day.
Is
sadness truly a sidekick? Are they all equal?
I thought of her as one because it's Joy's story.
Yeah.
I keep going back to like analyzing
it's here
it
because
from a
well, because I can go back and say like disgust or anger are definitely sidekicks a little bit more.
Well, they're almost like secondary characters.
Well, right. Where Joy
not,
and
they're not
sadness,
in the main story.
But Joy and sadness are very much a part of the main story. But as you said, it's
they're the ones going on this journey.
I understand,
getting
but
lost
is sadness a sidekick?
I think she is because she's already kind of established.
Right.
She knows herself.
Right.
And Joy doesn't yet.
Okay. Well,
I don't know.
Interesting.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah, please.
Sadness is sidekick. Is Dory? Is Mike Wazowski?
At the Disney
It is interesting
Click.
From film to film, though, with Pixar. Yeah. That's the magic of Pixar, that they can take a sidekick. I'm trying to think
really
if Disney has ever
it.
Done that.
Disney has a lot of stuff out there. It's just too hard to think.
Yeah, for
Pixar
sure.
Pixar is still, I mean, 15 films. It's manageable in my brain. But when you get a Disney, I mean, how many Disney films
and
are there?
Each of them is, almost all of them are very strong.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right. So, okay, well, that's our Disney list. On to the next thing.
Next up, make your case.
So I want to get into something. Briars and I want to get into something, kind of an attraction highlight for Disney parks. And one of my favorite, all-time favorite attractions is the Haunted Mansion, probably my number one attraction that I think is so Disney and so amazing. And I just want to say a few words, a little bit about the history, a little bit about my attachment to it. And I want to remind you guys out there that Briars and I are not historians or super, super, super experts on things.
No.
We are very enthusiastic fans who like to talk about
and
all things Disney.
And our passions overlap in some ways and some things feel very differently.
So I just don't want you to jump on us when, you know, we don't have every little detail or don't get everything right. A lot of this is learned over the years. A lot of it is a little bit of looking up online.
If you know something we don't,
yeah, well,
tweet
we'd love
us
to hear.
And, it's all about correct us. Give
it's all
us
about
the
you guys
facts or
yeah,
what
teaching
not.
Us things. So the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland was the original. Opened on August 9th, 1969.
Right before my birthday.
Okay.
Right around when our podcast debuted.
What was that? Okay. How time
flies.
Would
have been special for you.
Right.
just trying to
I appreciate that. The Disney legend, Harper Goff, he did a sketch that had kind of a, right off Main Street, kind of a crooked, crooked street going up to like a church and a graveyard. And then up on a hill was this creepy, spooky mansion.
And Walt was not.
No, well,
that.
He didn't want it to be. He had a famous quote of saying, like, we'll take care of the outside and let the ghosts take care of the inside.
Mm.
So he redesigned it and,
he's very concerned with appearances in the park and keeping a very
nice appearance.
Clean look.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think he struck a nice balance with the New Orleans Square manor.
It is neat that it looks like vastly different from world to land.
Yeah, for sure.
Very different, have their own vibe. And because they're kind of in different areas.
This is one of those parks. This is actually one of those things where I love them both. I maybe prefer the outside to the Disney World Haunted Mansion.
It looks a little more like a mansion.
Ominous. It looks a little more ominous to me.
I mean, you can see the greenhouse.
Yeah, it's kind of up on a hill. It's kind of lording over you. Looks
spooky. It really
spooky.
Looks like
I think
someone wealthy lived there.
And I think the Disneyland Mansion looks cool. And maybe it doesn't have the benefit of space that Walt Disney World has
for sure.
As much. And I think it's really awesome. It's the classic. And there'll always be an attachment to that. But it's not quite as foreboding as I feel
and
the Disney World one.
It's more New Orleans style.
Yeah.
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 Yeah,
so
for
sure. So it's cool. So anyway, so Anderson is Ken Anderson was the assigned Imagineer to the Haunted Mansion. And he used a lot of Goff's ideas. He studied New Orleans and plantations and all that sort of thing. And as I said, you know, Disney kind of nixed that and said, nope, it's got to look better outside. And class it up a little bit. So, you know, they then came on the Imagineers, Rolly Crump and Yale Gracie. And they recreated Ken Anderson's stories that he had dreamed up. And it was, Gracie sounds familiar for a reason. A lot of the characters are named after a lot of the Imagineers. So Gracie is obviously, you know, Gracie Manor and that sort of thing. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Are they both Gracie Manor or do they give each house a different name?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm more familiar with Disneyland,
right.
But I think they're both Gracie Manor, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
it's
feel like
funny.
The storyline, once you go on to the ride, the storyline is the same.
Yeah, the Walt
so
Disney World
like
has a couple additional rooms, but otherwise they're very similar in a lot of ways. In 1961, there are handbills announcing the 1963 opening of the Haunted Mansion.
It took a while to build, or there were some changes.
Well, here's the construction began a year later. They were kind of you know, hyping it up. And then there was a big delay. You know, obviously the exterior was completed in 1963. The ride didn't open until 1969. Talk about Star Wars land and everything
you
coming.
Can't complain.
6 years. Well, there's good reason. The World's Fair, where it's a small world, came out.
Yes, they were busy.
And Walt Disney died during that time.
Carousel of Progress was also at the World's
but
Fair.
But Walt Disney passed away.
Right. And then they went in a different direction.
Right. But that obviously had a lot to do with
for
the...
for sure, yeah.
It was a different time, and that's
and World was already...
everything.
He was starting plans on that, so there's
But I don't think that was the thing that stopped that. I think his death really impacted it.
But that could slow it down.
Yeah, I don't know. It could have.
Sounds
but,
like you disagree.
Well, I think that when somebody passes away, and obviously when Walt Disney passes
away,
that has a major impact on
plans. Creator and owner of the entire park.
So I really think that It's a Small World at the World's Fair and him passing away had a major impact on that delay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had the outside done. Well, they knew it was going to be some sort of ride at that point.
The mover that it's on.
The Omni Mover. Yep.
Was one of the first... of its kind, right?
Yeah, it was the first in Disneyland, I believe.
Right, so I feel like something like that, too, when you're creating, you know, what at the time is cutting-edge technology, that's got to not slow you down, but it's going to, you know, you're not just going to, you don't know what to do. You're creating it as you go.
Right.
Well, and it is really neat. It's neat technology that they've used. That's one of my favorite parts of the ride.
The Omni Mover, how they shuffle.
Yeah.
It's a people eater.
Now it's makes for an efficient line, and now it's Little Mermaid is that way. I mean, so many.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's really important to suck up people within those hot crowded days. A couple of the names that are associated with the voices in the Haunted Mansion: Eleanor Audley is Madame Leota. She's also was the Cinderella's wicked stepmother and Maleficent, the voice actress. Thurl Ravenscraft, which we have talked before, is a singing bust, but also Tony the Tiger
and the multi-talented,
the Grinch, you know, or the from the song "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." And then Paul Frees is the ghost host, and he was Boris Badenoff from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I will say all the voice work is outstanding on that ride. Each time you hear someone talking and the kind of overarching monologue that happens is is stellar.
Right.
It's great.
And
it
a little
sets the mood.
And a fact that perhaps many know or many don't, that in Disneyland, the stretching room, it's an elevator. You go down to enter the ride because you got to get under the tracks to the attraction. In Walt Disney World, it's just the ceiling just goes up because there's no, you don't have to get under anything. You just enter right. So it's just an effect of the ceiling stretching.
It is an elevator.
It's an elevator in Disneyland, but not in Disney World. Disney World,
okay,
it just
stretches. I'm always paranoid that it's an elevator on Hollywood Tower of Terror. It's an elevator when you're standing in the room watching the pre-show.
Right. I don't know.
I think it is one of them. That might be my
paranoid. Don't know. I don't know.
I'm like, where? Because
I haven't been on Tower of Terror nearly as much as I've been on the Haunted Mansion.
That's why they say go to the dead center.
Right.
Because they want it in the center.
They want you to see the pictures.
No, I think too, as an elevator.
Maybe.
If everyone's spread out, if it like centers the gravity for it to move.
I don't know if there's any truth to that, but it sounds good.
They do the same thing. They don't want you on the edges for Tower of Terror.
Okay, it's fair. So I thought that was interesting.
I'm thinking about these elevators. Sorry, I'm really into the elevator.
Yeah. No, the elevators definitely go down in Disneyland and they don't go anywhere.
It feels like you're dropping a little. It's heavy.
My personal attraction, and then, you know, they did the Haunted Mansion Holiday in 2001, which is another addition to an already great attraction. I happen to like the couple-month break that you get from the regular Haunted Mansion. They switch it up to the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I almost like that version better.
I think it's a little bit friendlier for kids. I will say that. I think the holiday one is friendlier for a four-year-old to go. It's a little more colorful, a little less creepy.
Oh, see, I think it's creepier.
Really? Than the Haunted Mansion?
I think it's that Tim Burton style.
I don't know.
Really
I think the bride who chaps her husband's
head. Oh, but that's just like
head.
Classic folk. You know, it's like ghosts. It's what they do.
I guess
they kill each other.
I don't know. I guess
normal.
I don't. I think one's a little more festive, a little. You have Zero floating around. I don't know.
Interesting.
So. But I've talked about this before. I have a huge attachment to the Haunted Mansion, not only for me. When I was at Disney World, I think for the first time, I was afraid to go on. I was staring outside at Disney World and watching my family go on, and they came back and they were just trying to get me on.
Do you have a fear of ghosts?
I don't know.
I mean, did
it
someone tell you, like, the
no.
ride has no drops, it doesn't
it
go upside
just,
down?
It was just spooky to me. I don't know. There's something.
It's literally a
you know,
bar.
It's one of those things that I had to work up my my guts, my strength to
how
go on it.
How old were you?
I 7, 8, 9, 10. I had to be young. I was under 10. I was maybe 8 or 9. I don't remember. I just can't remember the age I was there.
Wow.
I was fairly young. And
you can be pretty young. I feel like you can take like a 3-year-old on that, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny, you know. And so anyway, so finally my family convinced me to go on it. And I was scared out of my mind. And went on it and loved it and couldn't. They tell a tale of me going on it like 3, 4, 5 more times in a row.
That's
that was
funny.
How much I loved it. So obviously I have that connection.
The magic of Disney.
Right. And then now I have my daughter who absolutely loves the ride with me. It's our ride. And
there's so much to look at.
But I think there's so many other rides that I would think that she would be terrified that she would be much better going on over Haunted Mansion, but Haunted Mansion
I don't think of Haunted Mansion as scary.
There's
at
some
all.
Creepy images in there. There you don't think there's the hallway where there's the can pushing out of the coffin.
I guess it all feels very story. I don't know. I think because the ride itself is so smooth and calm, and that moment where you lean back and it's very relaxing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just never feels.
Yeah,
it never feels too. They never take it too far. No one ever actually like pops out, and there's no super scary moments.
Well, let me ask you this: which is scarier, like Snow White's Scary Adventures or the Haunted Mansion?
Snow White's probably
been a while since you've been on Snow White's.
Yeah, that's my problem.
Yeah,
I'd probably say Snow White's Scary.
Okay.
All those those kid.
What about
dark
Pinocchio?
Are, like,
scarier than Pinocchio's daring journey versus Haunted Mansion?
Trippy.
Yeah, I think so.
They the technology. I don't know if it was more dated. They just like rush through the darkness, and you're like, ooh, it's very. It's that abbreviated storytelling on those kids' rides.
Right.
So it's like 1 second, the main character's there, and then you flip into a new room and suddenly everything's happy.
Right.
That almost scares me
more.
Yeah, I don't
know.
I'm like, why is everything so fast?
I tend
so
to agree
fast.
With you. My kids have a harder time going on a lot of those other Fantasyland dark rides.
Those are, yeah.
Peter Pan's Flight, that should be a cakewalk.
Like Space Mountain is not as scary.
I mean, I love Space Mountain, but I can see why
but
that might be scary.
In terms of not actually...
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
dark,
I don't know. It's just interesting. So, but I think Haunted Mansion sums up, and I've said this probably a lot before. Haunted Mansion sums up what Disneyland does so well:
the immersiveness.
The queue is amazing.
The cast members are all part of the story, which is
everything.
Amazing.
Every little detail is. It's just to me. It's when I imagine Disneyland hit its stride as a theme park, as raising the bar. I know they raised the bar from the beginning, but when that came out, that was like, okay, this is
A-plus
entertainment.
As well. I would put Pirates in
Pirates
that
was 1967. Was that before or after Haunted Mansion? I think it was before, right? 1967 for Pirates?
You said what year was Haunted Mansion?
69.
Yeah, so it was like
Pirates
2 years before.
Pirates was 67, right?
Yeah.
Pirates was the same thing.
The same vibe of like, as soon as you're in line, you're already there on location.
Right.
And then as it goes on, you just get more, it's more immersive.
So I would really point to the Haunted Mansion as really a highlight for any Disney trip. And I can't wait to someday go to Phantom Manor. Over in the Hong Kong Disneyland, and just all the parks theme their Haunted Mansion a certain way, and it's really a special thing for me. I will not go to a park
in Euro Disney.
Yeah, that's
I've been, and I'm trying
Phantom,
to remember.
They call
it
Phantom Manor. I don't remember what they call it.
No, I don't think so.
Because Mystic Manor is the one in Hong Kong. It might be called Phantom Manor, but it's
we'll have to look
thing.
It up.
Yeah, I think it's Phantom Manor, but I could be wrong. But anyway, so that's my my little short brief history of the Haunted Mansion, what I know, what I've looked up, my connection to it,
and it's closed for a little while now while they prepare for the holidays.
Yeah, well,
it's currently closed.
So it's
for refurbishments.
Yeah, well, that's what they do, right?
Yeah,
right
it's now. An annual thing.
Yeah, it's at this point,
not at World.
At the point you're hearing this podcast, it will have been open and in the thing.
Possibly,
so,
but World's always open. You can go to January.
Well, but that's the down.
I mean,
thing.
Go.
They need on it. They need the Holiday Mansion down there. So.
I'd they like need.
I like the holiday. They don't have the Holiday Haunted Mansion, the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay down in there. So,
I think it's good that each park has their own thing.
Yep, I agree. So, okay, well, that's it for this one, and we'll on to the next.
Okay.
Sit down, movie lovers. Here comes movie reviews.
Okay, so for this next segment, we are discussing the most influential movies in our childhood.
Disney movies, right?
Disney movies, okay. That's good. No, anything. Universal.
I don't know. That
live action.
There'd be a lot of...
I guess it could
be too
action.
Big of a discussion.
So we kind of kept it open-ended, and we've both, again, not discussed beforehand, and we've just chosen some films that stood out in our childhood. And there is a little bit of an age difference. I don't know if we always make that clear, but so our childhood is encompassing different decades. So that kind of gives a little bit different options. So I don't think we'll have any overlap because the films that I chose would not be in your childhood.
This list is not about our childhood's most influential Disney movies, childhood or not. Like some of mine are
okay.
in my adult life too.
Okay. See, I just took it as childhood.
Okay. But that's the fun of this. So,
yeah. So maybe there will be overlap.
There probably will be then. If
I'd
you
like
put it
that.
Way. Okay.
On one of them.
Yeah. I think it'll only be one of them.
Yeah. Never more than one. You want to
do your first? Well, I'll do my first. It's
from your childhood
this
or
is,
adult?
Well, this is from my childhood, but this movie came out well before I was even born, and that is Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins is a big influence for me.
Creative, you're like, this came out when I was
No, it was way,
eight?
No, it was well before I was born. And but I
grew up watching it.
Yeah, back then there were shows that they played in... I don't know if they were dollar theaters or what have you, but we went in summer camp. We went to see it, and then I went to see it again, and then I caught it on TV. I love Dick Van Dyke's character, Bert, it was just kind of like Jolly Holiday, the songs. It doesn't seem like a movie that one would like. I don't know. I guess it's probably universally loved, and the Disney fan loves it or appreciates it, at
it's
least.
It's a classic, for
it is,
sure.
It is a classic. And I remember that it was probably the first film that something magic happened in the movies to me. I can't quite recall.
The mix of the animation and, with live action.
Right, but it was also engaging.
The story.
I probably had a little crush on the girl, you know.
Mary Poppins? Or
Mary Poppins. No, yeah. Not Mary Poppins. I was young.
Oh, the little
blonde
girl?
Yeah, I was young.
She's not special.
Yeah, but I was like 5 or 6.
I don't know, it's okay, seven.
I don't remember,
like,
you know.
Mary
sure.
Poppins?
Yeah, well. Yeah.
I loved Dennis Quaid in The Parent Trap.
Okay.
Disney movie.
There you go.
I'm remembering like, who's
but I just,
the father?
I just remember it transported me. Step in Time. I love Step in Time. That
great
number.
Great music, yeah.
It's just something that probably was kind of an awakening for the magic of movies for me. I couldn't tell you this at the time when I saw it. Of course, now as an adult, I can look back and say, this is one
that
of the things.
That was the moment.
Not the moment, but one of the moments.
Yeah.
Where
something,
like, something about
lit
movies
a fire
yeah,
you, yeah
lit a fire in me about movies and how magical and awesome they could be.
Did you see Saving Mr. Banks?
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
And did you?
I enjoyed it a great deal.
Okay.
I saw it actually on a Disney I saw it on a Disney cruise ship.
Well, that sounds
right?
perfect
isn't that pretty,
and
isn't that pretty
charming.
Cool? Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Very emotional.
Yeah. Great acting.
I didn't expect it to be quite as adult and heavy as it
yeah.
was. I really enjoyed it, but it was really
It's geared towards the older. I feel
I think so. It's not it has lighthearted. I don't know, but
get as much out of it.
If you are a not that you need to love everything just because it's Disney or the history of Disney,
no.
As a Disney fan and or a Mary Poppins fan, it's hard not to find something wonderful about saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
And,
it's just funny. She really fought him.
Yeah.
The author of Mary Poppins
yeah.
fought Walt along like tooth and nail
sure.
over everything. It's
yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah. So yeah. anyway, so that was a big one for me.
And,
yeah.
yeah.
What's one that from your childhood or in general?
So the one that stands out as the first film first of all, remember seeing in theaters. I can remember just being in the theater and being conscious that I was seeing a film. And also emotionally very depressing. And I like didn't watch it for 5 years afterwards because it was so sad. The Lion King, which to equate for my generation, it was the Frozen of my generation. I mean, my best friend had Nala, a stuffed animal Nala. Not a real lion. I had a stuffed Simba. We rehearsed. We did a choreographed dance and a talent show to I Just Can't Wait to Be King. I remember rehearsing to the cassette tape to age it.
You probably don't know this, but was The Lion King the biggest grosser of that you know, renaissance of Disney animation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was definitely the biggest earner.
And an
okay.
interesting fact, it was made at the same time as Pocahontas. They were made in neighboring animation studios right across from each other. And the rumor is that all the animators wanted to work on Pocahontas. They thought that was going to be the big hit.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, you know, if you look at Lion King, it's, you know, it's very simple. The coloring, it's in Africa. Maybe it's not as evolved. And they thought, you know, Pocahontas, all these colors and a princess. They just thought that was going to be the hit. And Lion King just swept it under
the
rug.
Well, Lion King was a runaway set. Pocahontas did okay, too, I think. Not Lion King.
It did fine. And I had some friends. I remember, like, friends that liked it. And I didn't even like it as a child.
But just
I mean,
because
it's
we don't.
Fine.
It
has good songs.
Right. It doesn't resonate with us as much doesn't mean it still didn't do well at
but
the
I
box office.
But I don't think. I think by Disney standards, it.
Was it a moderate hit? Or was it
no,
a total disappointment?
I think not a total, but I think it definitely underwhelmed in terms of box office success.
I guess there's definition of what
and
underwhelmed means.
And they came
means.
Out around the same time right. again.
I
think it's interesting.
I actually
Lion
went
King
see,
was the surprise.
I actually went to see Lion King not in the first round, but the re-release. They re-released it like later
yes,
in the year, and
like
I saw
the same,
it.
Yeah.
I saw it for the first time in that time, not the first time.
2011.
It came out. No. I saw it way before that. They re-released it in what it came out. What year did it come out? Do you know?
1994.
Yeah. So I probably saw it in like late 1994 or 1995, whenever it was re-released. A second
okay.
time.
Oh, because it was so time. Did so well
yeah,
in theaters,
even back then they were re-releasing movies like that. So That's a good one.
I mean the Mufasa storyline though. I mean it was the first time that I was so emotionally hit by a storyline as a child.
Right.
I remember, you know, my family bought it on VHS, and I was like, it's weird because I love the film, but as a child, I was like, I'm not watching that. It's sad. It was like too sad. Right. It was like I couldn't, in my head, Mufasa was still alive. He was happy with his son, Simba. Like, I couldn't deal because that death is just heart-wrenching, and the stampede is, it's visually stunning.
Right. Is it based on Macbeth? Is that what it's based on? Is it
Hamlet?
Yeah, I always get this confused. Hamlet. My admission is that while I appreciate the film very much, I think it's a good film. From my personal take, it's not one of my favorites.
Oh, that's a crime.
Right? I don't want to say it's overrated because that's too harsh.
Well, I think it's very highly rated, but I think everyone would agree that a lot of people argue it's Disney's best in terms of animated films.
What would you put above it? Well, let me tell you. I would put Beauty and the Beast, which is another one on my list. I like Beauty and the Beast better. I was a little bit older. I was still a kid, but I remember my sister
Oscar nominated,
which is a big deal. And my sister loved this movie, and she put it on. And probably on the outside, I'm like, oh, Beauty and the Beast again, girls, this and that. But inside, I'm sort of like, maybe she wore me down. And after a while, I'm like, I really like this movie. This is a good movie.
It is a good movie.
This is a good movie on its own. It's animated, and that's when That's when I started to see animation as not just a kid's thing, but it could be enjoyed on an adult or a different level.
Adults love
the
film as well.
The hand-drawn animation, yeah. And that's what this one did. So I love Gaston. I love you know, the...
Belle is the best princess. She's not just because I slightly resemble her.
Yeah, we joke and say that Briars looks a little like
and that's
Belle.
Not,
if she played a princess, it would definitely be Belle.
That's what I would want to play. Okay. But just to shout out to Belle... She falls in love with the man, not based on his looks. He literally looks like a beast. Falls in love with him. Then he happens to transform and be a prince. And she's a reader. She's super literate, smart, educated. Turns down Gaston. I mean, she's a class act.
Would that be the beast in the title, Beauty of the Beast, in the movie you're talking about? Who she falls in love with?
Yes.
Okay. That was a bad joke. Failed miserably.
Yeah, I did not get it.
I was going to try to get it earlier on, but you know, I didn't want to interrupt you.
I need this explained, and probably a lot of the viewers, listeners.
You said that she fell in love with a beast, and I was just going to say, oh, there's a beast in Beauty and the Beast, because it's in. Forget it. It's you know.
Yeah, you're digging. Where's your shovel?
Bad joke. You're handing me the shovel.
Keep digging.
So Beauty and the Beast is probably my all-time favorite animated Disney movie.
Wow.
That's how much of an impact it has. I've seen it so many times.
It's top five for me.
I appreciate it. I think the songs are great. I think the characters are great. I think there's a simple message that everybody should know. I just think there's so much good about it.
Yeah.
And I remember it. And I remember, once again, maybe it was like, my sister had put a mind control device on me, said, you will like this film because you're going to watch it so many times. And here I am.
It worked.
Many years later, like, yeah, that is, might be my favorite animated Disney film. So there you go. Do you have another one?
Yes. Another film that came out. I'm not sure of the year. I was a little older, but I distinctly remember seeing in theaters Mulan. And I think this was right at the end of Disney still being strong in animation. It was one of the last really good animated films, I think, before they hit their drought of Brother Bear 1 and 2.
We always mention Brother Bear.
I know,
is it really
it's so
that
easy.
Bad?
It's not good. I mean, you watch it once and it just feels like a like a DreamWorks film.
Right.
The film's like another studio made it, and it's like, oh gosh, Disney made
other
this.
Studios do make good films too.
Right, but in terms of children's films, animated films particularly, Disney's the gold standard.
Disney's more consistent, but there's a lot of other.
And I
great
think they're
DreamWorks
back to their consistency.
Okay, all right, fair enough. So anyway, so you're saying Mulan.
And I think it stood out because talking again, I love Belle, but I also love Mulan as a Disney princess because of she's the heroine of the film. A lot of the other films, it's the It's the man saving her, you know, Sleeping Beauty is asleep the whole time. Snow White falls asleep and needs to be kissed to be woken up. And Mulan really takes control of her own destiny. And that was neat to see. And it's just a, it's just comically, you know, you've got Mushu, Eddie Murphy, love that character. And the music in Mulan is amazing. And just, I love the entire film. And I think I probably, you know, I grew up with brothers. So I was forced to watch a lot of, talking about you being forced to watch Beauty and the Beast. I didn't have a choice. And we watched a lot more of the films that were pandered to boys. And so I think it was fun to be able to, you know, my brothers liked Mulan just as much as I did. But it was, you know, a woman at the lead of it.
Right.
So that was special.
I have to go back and watch Mulan. I have seen it a couple times, but it's been a very long time. I can't remember.
Very good.
I mean, I remember Mushu. And,
I want to say 1998 is my guess.
Seems a little late to me, but I don't know. It's not one that's strong in my memory banks.
Yeah.
So, and my final
it's
one.
It's not in my brain.
Well, there's some that I can.
You should watch it with your daughter.
Put a time frame. I will. But yeah. I think she's seen it already, actually.
But again. It's worth repeating.
Movies take you back to a certain time, place and time. And the good ones, I really remember the area or time. And that's this last one is no exception for me. It was 1995, Toy Story. That's the one. And it seems...
Stolen my thunder.
Yeah, it seems so obvious. And this is the one I thought that Breyers and I would share. It showed to me once again that an animated film, granted computer animated, could work on so many levels and have so many layers, appeal to the kid in me, the adult in me, and be different than what had come before. And that was really hard because it came at a time where things were, I think, getting tired. We'd seen this.
It was when Disney animation was having its slump.
Yeah. It just,
and Pixar saved
and
it.
And maybe Pixar highlighted Disney having its slump even more so.
Well, on all anime. There wasn't any other studio making good kids films.
Right. But so Pixar just showed, this is how you do it now.
It's what you
the
can
rules,
do.
The rules have changed, and this is what you can do. And at the time, I was working at a movie theater, so I saw it a few more times probably than I've seen a lot of other things, because I could kind of catch different parts or stay after and see
you can
it.
Watch it so many times and it's so quick.
Right.
There's so much to catch
every time.
It's just
such a good... If it wasn't for Pixar, I will say... Pixar and my kids, because my kids... Of course, we go to movies with my kids. But if it wasn't for Pixar, I think I might have been done with animated films in my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I might have been like, I don't have any interest in them. I'm very thankful.
Yeah, is it worth your time if
Pixar
pandered to children?
I'm thankful for my kids as well, but I'm thankful for Pixar to kind of give us something together that we all can enjoy on many different levels, and that's really hard to do. And they influence others to do it, to try to do it as well.
Toy Story was my other film.
Yeah,
I remember seeing in 1995, and again, I remember specifically my parents laughing a lot during the film at things I didn't understand. But I remember being like, this is like kind of, it's neat that they're enjoying it. As you know, it's not a task for them to have to go see a kids movie with their kids. And they were enjoying it. I love that. It felt so inclusive. It was like, we can all enjoy this together. And that was really special. And I mean, Pixar has definitely upheld that pretty much throughout all of their films.
Right. It's interesting you say that, by the way. I have that feeling about Jurassic Park. I know it's not Disney, the first Jurassic Park. I took my dad and my family
best.
To it. And it's like we had an experience that we all could enjoy it together, no matter of age or anything. It was just, it's such a memory in my head. And Toy Story, a lot of Pixar films, I think, are kind of equal that, perhaps in a different way, but the same idea that it's just everybody can enjoy it and nobody has to be dragged to the theater so
everyone
much.
Everyone wants to see it. I've seen almost all the Pixar films with my family.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
there are people out there who
like
still
Pixar.
See Pixar's animation and they have no interest, and that's fine.
That's rare, though. I mean,
there's a lot of people out there who just animated is animated to them. Well, I'm telling you, there are people who don't. We run in circles who care about that sort of thing, but they do exist. I don't know if they're listening to this podcast, but they do exist. So. We've shared a couple of our memories, some childhood, some young adult, I would say, you know, but they are a reason perhaps why we're here today and why we love
Disney. Ignited that passion for Disney and For good quality film.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. So if you have anything to contribute or any your childhood Disney films or
please share them with us.
Yeah. Go to the Disney Click, @TheDisneyClick, #TheDisneyClick.
#TopFiveDisneyClick to share your own top five with us.
Right.
You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @TheDisneyClick.
Right. So thanks for joining us. We hope you have a magical week. You want me to say magical week?
Yes.
Okay. And
five times.
Three more to go. Magical, magical, magical week, week, week.
And there you go.
Have a great time. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Bye.
The Disney Click is a Meltdown Presents production, produced by Terry Luberoff and Mason Booker. Audio engineer, the miracle worker, Mason Booker, with your hosts, Rick Luberoff and Briars Newman. Our theme song, King of the Swingers, is performed by the Swing Ninjas and provided by freemusicarchive.org. Jazzy Frenchie is our break music and can be found on binsound.com. End credit music, Dill Pickles, is performed by the Heftone Banjo Orchestra and provided by freemusicarchive.org. Don't forget to tweet us @TheDisneyClick. You can also follow us on Instagram @TheDisneyClick. Use the #TopFiveDisneyClick to share your own top five.